Hello and welcome to the San Carlos Computer Club. I'm Scott Stimson, your host, and typically I do this intro with my daughter Bibiana. Bibiana celebrated her birthday last night by having a movie party with video games hosted on the roof of our house with a 100-inch projection screen and tents for spending the evening. Needless to say, she's a bit wiped out, and I've let her off the hook for doing an intro today. Happy birthday, baby. I love you. She may be back next week, so check in then to catch the next Bibiana intro. Until then, this is the intro to the San Carlos Computer Club meeting from December 1st, 2020. I hope you enjoy this meeting. And will join us for our next meeting on the 8th. Until then, tech on. Does anybody hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I have some. We ordered two new computers from Costco. They were.
Oh yeah.
Not HP, but what's the one that starts with an L?
Oh, Lenovo, much better, Lenovo. Better quality computer, at least up until recently. Hey, Jim.
One of them came with no operating system.
What?
And the other one.
You mean it started up and it just went blank? It was just blank?
It's just blank, yeah. And the other one has an operating system, but there's something else wrong with it. No camera or something like that. So they're both going back.
What were they, display models? That's crazy.
No, it was shipped from East Coast, you know. It wasn't open boxes.
Oh, so you didn't get them in the store. You had them sent to you.
Yeah, we didn't. We didn't go in the store if we can help it.
Did you? I thought I heard you say Best Buy. Is that right?
No, Costco.
Costco, okay. Because you can buy directly from Lenovo as well.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if that would be a better deal or not. Jim, is that your speakers? I can hear myself talking.
Could be. Hold on.
Maybe just turn them down just a hair. Testing, 1, 2. We're just about to begin. We're a minute away from the beginning. And so I'm going to go ahead and hit the streaming button. Hopefully this is going to work in just a moment. There we go. We should be online. And welcome all. I am Scott Stimson with International Computer Solutions. And you are the San Carlos Computer Club. We meet every Tuesday at 10 a.m. to talk about tech topics and a lot of San Carlos stuff as well. I hope you're all doing good today. I've been talking with Paul and Fred, Cheryl and Bill, and trying to sort out internet connections and notifications. Jim, are you getting notifications of the club, and how many notifications are you getting? Because if it's more than two, I want to help you sort out why you're having to get more than two notifications.
Did you ask me that question?
I did. You're on stage.
Okay. No, I get just one a day.
Oh, good.
One the morning before.
You get one the morning before. That's interesting. I wonder.
Yeah,
how
usually
that
comes in about 45 minutes, maybe an hour before.
Before we start. Okay.
Right.
And that's an email notification that I send out personally in the morning. And then you may get one other notification that is from Google Calendars. Since you're part of the meeting, you're accepted into the meeting, you should be able to get into the meeting without me authorizing you, and you get a notification to remind you.
I bet you're right.
And my only concern is if you're dealing with more than two notifications, then you may have a calendar entry of an old meeting in Google, and it's just needs to be deleted to get rid of it. But it may be coming in and looking very similar to the legitimate messages.
You know, I'm not getting the calendar notification anymore.
Oh, okay. Are you on the calendar? There's Dave. Hey, Dave, welcome. We're just talking about notifications. How are you doing this morning?
Well, I actually have a question for you today.
Oh, great. Topics have come. Hey, Dave, I've got a question for you. Right now we're talking about notifications, and I'm curious, how many notifications of the computer club do you get?
One.
Just one? Email. An email? And right. I had to let you into the meeting. I had to give you permission to get in the meeting. And if you're accepted into the calendar entry, it should be letting you in automatically. So I'm just checking. Like, Dad just popped in automatically. Good morning, Pop. Looking dapper.
Under Netflix, which wasn't giving me audio, you know, microphone, basically, and stuff, it would let me in automatically. But under Edge, it doesn't.
Under Edge, it doesn't. Under, you said Netflix, but I think
Netflix,
you...
Netflix, it was, yeah.
What do you mean by Netflix? Chrome?
Mozilla Netflix, you know, the browser.
Under Firefox.
I'm asleep today, so what?
It's okay. I'm sure you're thinking Netscape, which is a really easy language slip to make. Netflix and Netscape. I've done it myself. And Netscape is where Firefox originated. That was the one of the original browsers.
When you're this old, you forget things.
Yeah.
Oh, boo.
You okay there, Jim?
Yeah.
So, Dave, you're getting one in email. Pop, are you getting a bunch of notifications from me? I was just going through with the group. I want to make sure you're not being molested by old emails. I have two notifications that go out today. There's one the calendar will trip automatically, and the other is an email I send personally. And I wouldn't expect you to get more than that.
Well, I'm definitely not overwhelmed with your emails.
Okay.
But your mother can't even find one this morning.
Oh, no.
You forgot to invite your mother?
It's supposed to be automatic.
I haven't gotten any messages since November 26th on my computer.
Really?
You're not getting any messages?
Yeah. Right. Let me...
Well, Scott, to help you, I do not get a calendar notification, but that's because my PC, which runs Outlook on my PC, not the web, doesn't seem to want to configure itself properly with Microsoft email and calendar.
Oh, okay. Well, the calendar notification, I think of it as showing up as a reminder on your actual calendar, whatever calendar is being synced with your Google account. Or an email to you, depending on how you've set up your calendars. And so maybe you're only getting the one email I send because of the way you have your calendars set up. I just wouldn't expect you to get more than two notifications. Anything beyond that, I think, would be an accident. I'd like to help you sort out why you're getting that. But it sounds so far like everything's working the way it's supposed to. And, Mom, I've got you in here. SandyJStimpson@gmail.com. I'm sure that's right.
No, my computer just won't go past November 26th. You can tell I haven't been working my computer.
So maybe after your class, Scott, you could spend some time with your mom straightening out her email there.
Sure, something odd's going there. I'd at least expect it to be working on your... on your iPhone, because that would think it'd be the same account. What have I done? Yeah, I'm here.
I got two mails from you. I have one at 8:15 this morning and one at 8:16 this morning, and that's all I got from you.
So, Fred, that sounds like you've got your camera, or I'm sorry, I'm changing camera settings at the same time we're talking. That sounds to me like you've got your calendar settings set up to send you an email notification. One of those is a calendar notification. I believe.
You don't send out a calendar notification until 45 minutes before?
Well, the other notification it could be is from the blog, if you are listed on the blog, but I don't think anybody's listed on the blog.
God, the one that I sent back to you, I think it is the blog, because it has all the things about... open it again.
Okay, so if... Go ahead, Cheryl. I'm sorry.
It looks like the blog. Okay, so it says... Oh, wrong one.
I want to know how that even works. You must be following the blog. It's in some fashion.
It says, the San Carlos Computer Club, Scott posted, streaming live. So it's whatever was posted on the computer club comes in an email to me. When you post the podcast, so a couple of days ago.
Yeah, or yesterday, because I'm behind schedule again.
I must have deleted it already when I was cleaning up last night. Oh, you know what? I think it comes as a promotion.
Oh, it segregates out in the Gmail fashion of those tabs at the top. I think it's Gmail doing that.
No, I can't see it now. Well, maybe that was on. Well, Facebook, I get a notice, and then when I click on it, it goes to the blog, and that's where I see all your links.
Sorry, I got distracted with this whole topic.
And I'm busy signing some documents for our banking. So we're all distracted. Everybody's doing their own thing.
We've all decided to do our own thing. Well, hey, as long as this is the beginning of our meeting, do we have any recommendations for this week? Anybody been thinking about stuff that they'd want to share? Fred,
I see your StreamYard, I think.
What was that, Dave?
I think you were recommending it. For searching.
StreamYo for finding things to watch?
Right. Well, basically, what I was watching disappeared from the site I was watching with a TV series. So I figured it's got to be located somewhere else. So I went to use StreamYo, and I remember you saying you didn't have an account with them. You just signed on as a guest, I remember.
That's right.
So you wouldn't share your information.
Yeah, I tried.
I can't seem to get that to work. It seems to always, I guess I must have created an account, and it always insists upon it before you can do anything else.
Well, you should be able to sign out of whatever you've signed into. And then
I'm not signed in.
When StreamYo comes up, it'll give you the option of going in under your Facebook account, your Google account, or your own StreamYo account using your email. And if you scroll to the bottom of that, there's the option to for guest login. Is this on a Windows 10 computer?
Yes.
It is starting up now, but it'll give you a guest list. So if I remember right, you have to flip a switch. You have to flip a switch for agreeing to the terms of service, and then you click on the guest login. Oh, this is interesting. I'm getting a different window than I've seen before. What if I sign up with email? There we go. You hit sign up with email, and then accept the terms and conditions, and then guest login. And then the last part is...
it's just giving me a sign-on screen, so I must have created one, so... Probably it's a cookie I have to delete.
Well, it's not a browser. I mean, it would have to be inside. It's self-contained. It's not using a browser. You've got the application installed, right? If I turn off StreamYo and turn it back on, I'm sure it's going to ask me to sign in again. And so, Dave, what does your screen look like? Does it look like this when it comes up? See, it says continue with Facebook or email password, log in. And then below that, it says sign up with email.
I'm getting a different screen to start with. And top bar, It's coming up first in Swedish and gives you a choice of English.
Are you sure we're using the same app?
S-T-R-E-A-M-I-O?
No, it's S-T-R-E-M-I-O.
Yeah, okay. I knew there was a basic problem.
That makes sense.
Sounds good. Thanks, sir.
You're welcome. Solving.
I think it's pronounced Stramio.
Stramio? Well, I'm definitely not going to argue the nuances of how to pronounce something that we've learned of on the internet. Maybe if I pronounced it Stramio, people would spell it correctly when they go looking for it. But this is what we're here for, debugging Stramio problems in real time at the Computer Club.
Okay, Scott, I got a comment or two.
I hope it's not criticism. I'm feeling very vulnerable this morning.
No, it's not. It's not. Cheryl and I have a small confession to make. We have not watched the newest Mandalorian yet.
What?
We are savoring it like the last piece of Halloween candy. You know, we just haven't got to it yet. But I noticed on the internet today that they have what's called the Gene Guy. Have you heard of the Gene Guy?
Oh, yeah, that was from the episode before. You've seen that episode.
Yeah, I know. I've seen that one.
Yeah.
And there's a kerfuffle about whether they should leave him in or take him out or whatever. This is from people who watch each episode 300 times just to see if there's something in there that nobody else has seen.
Does everybody anyway. Know what Bill's talking about? No,
I can't remember what the Gene Guy was, but...
Go ahead, Bill. Explain the Gene Guy.
In the one scene where they come running around a corner and shoot the guys at the control station, there's in the background is what it's not an Easter egg. It's a mistake. There's one of the crew members is standing. So he thought he was out of the shot, and he was, and he's got blue jeans on. So he's become the Gene Guy. He's famous for 15 seconds in his life. No, actually about a quarter of a second in his life. So the dispute is whether they should leave him in or take him out.
So it's actually no longer a dispute. Disney has digitally removed him.
I think so. I think you're right.
Yeah, there's an article on The Verge from yesterday that's Disney digitally removes the Mandalorian's accidental crew member cameo.
And the Star Wars fans, the one I'm reading, Star Wars fans are unhappy with the Mandalorian pulling a Game of Thrones and removing the Jeans Guy. So,
that's right, because they removed the Starbucks cup.
Yes,
in Game of Thrones.
Anyway, I enjoy these things. I don't go looking for them, but when they show up, I enjoy going and finding them just because. Anyway, the second thing, Cheryl alluded to it this morning, that I have a new girlfriend, like. She calls Alexa my first or second girlfriend,
okay.
And now I have Susie. Susie is a iRobot vacuum cleaner that is completely controlled by the internet. If you care to do it, I can set her to do one little piece of the carpet if I want. Anyway, we have named her Susie, and I now have two internet or electronic girlfriends.
That's I've got an iRobot as well. I love it. My kids named it Cleaner.
Cleaner. There you go.
And it has googly eyes.
if you had a cat, you could get it to write on it and put it on the internet.
Right. I was trying to bring up the Gene Guy picture here.
The first thing that happened when Bill was snow blowing this year, and I think you guys saw the video of him doing his snow blowing, he wound up a chain in the snow blower. So the first time we set the Susie to clean, she goes into my office, and she didn't get very far before she had a whole bunch of beads all climbing. she knocked something and they all fell on the floor. And yeah, the next thing you knew, we had beads in the vacuum cleaner. They came out quite easily and we didn't wreck anything. But this one, it maps the house. So we were at a doctor's appointment yesterday and waiting. And anyways, Bill's programming Susie to clean the living room and a carpet. And it reminded me of the old commercial that you used to see these ladies like with their wine glasses and they'd look into the camera and they'd say, I'm cleaning my toilet bowl.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, we're using technology to clean the house when we're not even home. So,
you know, that's Well, that's a great point. In fact, I get frustrated. My wife doesn't takes for granted that I put out the robot. She just thinks that's all there is to it. And it's like, no, you don't understand. I got to go pick up after all three of you guys. I need to put things up high, move cables. I mean, it's a different way of vacuuming. Got to empty
this
it.
One,
yeah.
This go one ahead. Is actually not that bad at getting around obstacles on the floor. I purposely threw a towel on the middle of the living or the bedroom floor. She just encountered it and worked around it. She didn't balk at it at all.
Typically,
something for herself. That's the reason we have this one. I hated my old one where you had to, you know, every 20 minutes she would call you from the other room and you had to come and take her apart and your hands, you know, pull everything out and clean the brushes. This one has this little station where she goes back to, and it sucks it all up into this container that you take over and dump.
Oh, wow. That's nice. So what model is that?
I don't know. It's a Ninja iRobot. Anyway, and it's quite amazing to watch her learn the house, you know, that they navigate around. You know, their learning algorithm is just a whole lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, so is this one actually mapping your house, or is it using that fuzzy logic? Yeah, it's actually mapping the house.
No. She cleans in a straight line. She maps the house. She goes all the way around. Takes her a couple of tries to get the map right. And then you can designate, you know, a certain spot, like the living room carpet. You can say, go clean the living room carpet. If I've drawn a square around where I want her to clean, she'll come down the hall, up onto the carpet, and clean it, and then go back to her station.
Is this it? Is
all
it
by herself.
Shark?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, the shark.
I thought you were kidding.
The one on the
said,
left. One with.
It's a ninja. This one right here with the basket. That sounds like a really good price.
What? Oh, that's U.S.
Yes, that is U.S.
But anyway,
it's U.S. Other... It's $200 cheaper right now.
Yeah, ours was $100 off at Costco, so it was $399 Canadian. So that's a little bit better.
But. I've still got that original Costco iRobot. 500 series, pet series, and that's the one you're talking about. You'd have to go into the other room and disengage it from your USB charger for your phone, pick up shirt that it's gotten stuck in.
It's got two little barriers. They're about this big. Anyways, I'm looking at her. She's iRobot Roomba. That's called a Roomba.
Yeah, Roomba. Roomba series 500. Well, this one's a different manufacturer called Shark, and that's why I thought that Bill was joking about the Ninja brand name. But they actually have something here called Shark Ninja. I don't know.
Yeah,
Ninja Kitchen.
I don't think Ninja on our box.
Yeah,
Shark
I don't
Ninja.
Know. I'm not sure. Anyway, the next piece of technology came the other day from Amazon, and it's a little security camera. The $20-some for the security camera. So now I can be away and start her up and watch her, make sure she's doing it right.
That's really funny. Now
I can watch the hired help work from afar.
That's right. Make sure they're doing their job. I'm curious. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Our last Saturday Monday purchase, but there's two actually, are coming today. One is being sent to my sister. My sister has the Fire, what's it called? Amazon Fire
Tablet.
Fire Tablet.
And she had been sent all of my family's photographs on a USB stick.
Okay.
She said, I have no way I can use a USB stick. So, and she has a lot of problems with technology. Anyways, I found for $8 a USB male, female port that has a little cord. I think it's the 3-foot cord that I got, and it goes into her power port on her tablet. And hopefully when she gets it today, I'll be able to tell her how to open the pictures and see everything that we got digitized.
Okay, but it's all on a USB drive.
It's a USB stick.
The, the pictures are on a USB stick, and this cord is a male USB-C, the small one, and the full size USB. It's just a converter.
An or adapter, converter. So it can plug
an adapter,
in.
Yeah.
And OTP hopefully, on the go.
And yeah, and she's going to plug it in to hopefully a new iDevice or a Android device, right? That's the reason.
Android.
You're doing that?
And Amazon Fire tablet.
Okay.
We hope it's going to work.
I hope it's going to work too. The Amazon portion is the only thing that would make that questionable, I would think. If it was just some generic Android device, I would expect it to work because that on-the-go cable has been around forever now. That type of interface with Android has been around forever. So it'd have to be something Fire tablet specific that would stop you from doing that.
Well, you know, when we went looking for them on the U.S. Amazon site, I found one that is specifically said for Amazon Fire tablet, things like that. Not available on the Canadian site and would not ship to me on from the U.S. one. So it took a while, but I finally found one where in the review section, one of the guys had said, worked great with my Amazon Fire HD 8.
That's the information you want. In fact, I just found one. It says it's currently unavailable. Isn't the internet amazing? I just put in a quick Google search for Amazon tablets, Fire tablets, and OTG, and it came up with an Amazon listing here, Master Cables, OTG USB cable, compatible with fifth generation, fourth generation Amazon Fire tablets.
Hey, Jimmy, Boo.
You know,
Boo. We're all friendly, Boo.
You know, in a Macintosh world, and it might be the same thing for the Amazons, I just don't know, but in a Macintosh world, you would license something like that. I hope that's not the case. I hope that there's any generic OTG cable would work.
I didn't hear the first part. I'm sorry, but I was distracted.
Morning, Maggie.
Good morning, everybody. I bought an Amazon Fire tablet this summer and it didn't work. I had to take it back 10 minutes after I tried to set it up. I forget what she said was wrong with it, but it didn't work. So I just went home and did what you guys said to do. I reset my Samsung to factory and it works great.
What were you buying a tablet for?
I thought my Samsung had it.
Oh, you're just going to replace the Samsung.
Yeah, I just was replacing it and I didn't want to spend $300 or $400 for something to read a book on and read my email on. So I got the Fire because it was $99, but it didn't work. So I had to come home and do what you all said and my Samsung is like new.
That's awesome.
I have a question unless I'm changing the subject too soon.
No, not at all. We're just carousing around topics at the moment. So you're right.
I see that.
This is the perfect time.
Much more interesting topics than what I have. Okay, here's my problem. It's with my iPhone. You know, I have an 8. My husband has a 6, and I didn't test it on his. But after the last update, when I open something like, say, real estate listings that I get, I like to keep an eye on the market in Tucson. So I see something that looks interesting. I click on it. I read about it. I check the map where it is, blah, blah, blah. Then I want to go back so I can look at the next listing. Before the last update, there was a little back arrow at the bottom of the page, and it took me right back. Now I have to close the whole thing, go back to my mail, and reopen it.
Huh.
Any suggestions?
This is an iPhone 8 that is running iOS 14.
Are you looking at it in Safari? Like, what are you using to look at the real estate listings?
Well, it sounds it's coming out of your email, right? What you're doing is you're bringing up your email. You're clicking on a link in your email. It's bringing up a web page.
Right.
And then when you're done, you want to close that and go back to your email.
Correct. And I have to close it. It closes in Chrome and then I have to go back to my email and reopen everything. And I didn't have to do that before. Always had a little back arrow. It's not going to kill me, but it's annoying.
There are a number of you folks using iPhones out there. Is anyone listening to this right now? I see Fred's on his phone immediately. Are you running the iOS 14 on your phone? And maybe you can reproduce this kind of issue that Maggie's having. I don't have the phone with me. But the fact that it was there and now it's gone, I wouldn't be surprised, because that was a generation leap in operating systems. And so things like that happen. But there must be a way to create the same experience.
Yeah, you'd hope so.
When I open things in my email, I my default browser is Safari. So it opens in Safari, and at the bottom of my Safari things, there's always a back button.
You don't have to sign out completely and go back in.
Does it take you back to your email when you use the back button from Safari?
No, it just takes me back to whatever web page I was on. So I'm on my Sutton.com, which is a real estate site, and I can move between listings.
But if you were to bring up a listing from your email, or just bring up any link from your email, what kind of experience would you have? Would it bring you back to your email?
See, I don't have Chrome on my iPhone.
Is it Chrome that you're using it with, Maggie?
Me? Yes.
So I wonder if
you know what else? I just thought of something. This just started recently, too. When I click on it, it says wants to open in Edge, and I click OK. So maybe it's Edge that's the problem. How do I get rid of it?
It might be a problem because of your default browser. Before this operating system, you were forced to open it in Safari. With iOS 14, you're supposed to be able to set a new browser to open things in. And maybe if you were to set it to Safari, the experience you're having would go back.
Okay, I just did that. Put it back on Chrome.
And you may want to try Safari, because even though Chrome was your default before iOS 14, I don't think the Mac email program was using it. I think it was forcing you to use Safari.
I don't think so anyway, Scott. It's always been... Let me see.
Yeah, you'd know better than me. I'm just trying to wrap my head around your experience. But I haven't done any of that with the iPhone.
Okay. I'm going to get into one that I open quite often and see what happens. Yeah. And I'll report in get there.
If it doesn't work with Chrome being set as your default, then I would try Safari and see if that experience comes back.
Okay.
Because the way I understand it theoretically is that you didn't have any control over your default browser before this latest release, and now you do.
Yeah.
And so
I think you're right.
I'm thinking when you went to a web link from an Apple product like Apple Mail, then you're forced to use Safari, even though Chrome is what you normally do. You're forced to use Safari, and that's what was providing you with that experience. But this is all speculation on my part.
Okay, we're going to find out right now. I just opened a recipe, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
And there is no back arrow.
And that's under Chrome or under Safari?
That's Chrome.
Okay.
But you opened a browser page with the recipe on it. You haven't been to any other browser page to go back to.
Well, Cheryl, actually...
My email.
And actually, it works the same in Android as well, is that you have an Android back button... Which the iPhone never had until recently. And if I opened up a browser on my Android phone from my email and I hit the back button, it would take me back to my email app. And
you know what? My Messenger does that. Like if somebody sends me an attachment in Messenger, I go to the attachment and then I think I'm going back something else and I go back to the message. You're right.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's an example.
Oh, I can't.
These are some recipes. It's a recipe. It's no big deal.
Okay.
So it says see more. There's 15 recipes. So I click on see more, and they all come up. 15. All right, I'm going to pick one. View recipe. Click on it. It opens up the recipe. I read it. No, I don't like that one. I want to go back. No back arrow. Down at the bottom. It's there, but it's not highlighted. It won't work.
Right.
So what I have to do is close it like that
and
reopen my mail and start from scratch.
So I want you to try and switch to Safari as your default and do the same thing again and see if it changes.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I'm just thinking that my theory at this point is maybe you were using Safari and not knowing it when you were coming from your email.
I could have been. So Safari's not an option for me there. So let me...
Somebody's ringing. Should I get that?
Not me. Well, I can't even find Safari. When I'm in my settings and I type in Safari, it says Safari ID iCloud. I open it. There's no apps using iCloud. Nothing, no Safari there.
I wish I could be of more help. I wish I had an iPhone, at least one that would run 14, so I could be running through you. I'm going through web pages right now. Oh, there is something called a backtap. It's an accessibility feature. You find it in settings under accessibility, under touch. Look for backtap.
Okay, accessibility.
There's a set list of systems and accessibility
touch.
Functions.
And it's called what?
Backtap. Long press back button. If you are six menus deep in an app and you want to go back to the
top. Okay, double tap. Let's try it. Accessibility shortcut, backtap. Okay, let's see if that works.
I would bet, I mean, I'm just guessing, but I would bet this has to do with the default, the new default apps and this new navigation stuff. I think if we keep looking at it, we're going to find a way to bring you back the same experience you had before, but it's probably not going to work the same way it worked before. What about setting your browser to Safari? Were you able to do that, set your default browser?
I can't even find it.
Browser.
When I search in settings... What comes up? Safari, Apple ID, iCloud. I open that. I see iCloud, managed storage.
Hey,
it wouldn't be in there.
You might check and see if you've got an update to Safari you don't have installed in the App Store, apparently. Search for Safari and see if it finds anything.
Safari browser. I put in Safari browser and Google Chrome came up.
Nah.
And Microsoft Edge. No, that's not Safari. No Safari.
Okay.
Oh, I'll be darned. It doesn't even come up. I'm in the... Let's try a different one.
They've done some strange stuff, and so I'm not sure if it's supposed to come up or not. It was integrated into the operating system. And so you never really thought about having to get it from the App Store. But what they've also done recently is they've pulled the podcast app out as its own app, and you have to go after it now. It's not part of your...
Oh.
And so... I'm just not up to date on this iOS 14 stuff is all new.
Okay. I'll do a search and find it.
I'm going to put it on my back burner to think about, too. And we can ask Judy if she's been updating her stuff regularly. We can ask if she has the same experience.
Yeah, good idea.
I'm surprised she's not here right now. So is there any topics, recommendations, anything that you'd like to share with the group? So far, we've been solving iPhone problems and talking about vacuum cleaners. It's been a good meeting. James, I see your lips moving, but I don't hear anything. But I can hear Paul breathing.
Can you hear me?
Irving, I can hear you just fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Oh, real good. Are you back in Mexico?
Yeah, I've been here a couple of months. And I have a question.
Certainly.
From the last meeting, we're talking about Express VPN, and so I decided to download it. And I find, like, if I'm on Google and I put in a request, instead of getting an American reply, I get a lot of links to Spanish language. And so that evidently is not recognizing the VPN.
You're certain it's connected?
Well, it says it is. It gives me a button to press, and it's connecting me to Miami, and it says connected.
As far as using your browser with it, isn't there a plugin that also... Have you tried changing the location just to see if you get a different experience?
No, it's pretty new. I just I just got it, and I'm also having trouble with with my Netflix account. I'm still picking up, I think, the Mexican programming.
Boy, it sure doesn't sound like it's connecting, because from my experience, you just hit that connect button and your whole computer is on that link. I think if I were you, Irving, I would go into it a little deeper and just change the location where it's connecting, just like from Dallas to California. Just try and force an experience change.
Okay, I'll try that.
Yeah, in my experience, what happens is it affects the entire computer. As far as Netflix go, if you're doing it on the computer, it should be affecting that as well. In fact, Netflix should either be in the country of the VPN, or you get an error message saying, hey, you're using a VPN, turn it off to use Netflix.
Well, I got that from Prime, and now I'm experimenting with Fire Stick. Supposedly, I'm supposed to be able to go through Fire Stick to get American programming on Prime, but I'm thinking that it's the same problem happening with the other end of it, and when I resolve it, maybe it'll work.
Actually, on your Fire Stick, you would either need to install the VPN app. I don't know if you've tried doing that yet. Or you would need
I actually did, but I'm running out of time to fool around with all this stuff, so I'll have to just redo it.
You know what I like about ExpressVPN is that you can get a router and load the VPN in the router. And so then your whole network is available through the VPN. Well, so your smart
I have the Telmex router. Is that something I can do myself?
Well, you would have to get a VPN router that's supported by ExpressVPN. So
and does Express support the Telmex router?
No, it doesn't. You actually, if you go to the ExpressVPN page, it will give you a list of the routers that they support.
And then I would have to set that up in series?
Yes. Yeah, you would plug it into your Telmex router, and then everything that goes through that ExpressVPN router would be on the VPN.
Yeah, the easy way to check if he's connected or not with any VPN is just do an IP config and see if the third character is one, that's your local, and if it's something, or your, connection to the VPN.
Oh, I hear what you're saying. If you were to go to a command prompt and... Well, another way, you could just check your location. You could go to Google and do a search for your location. And it should, if you're running across
that the VPN. That does not work with ExpressVPN to check location. You must use their code to check what they think you're in location. In my case, ExpressVPN works very, very well, except for CBS All Access, where about 75% of the time I connect to Wichita rather than my configured Denver site.
Well, you're right. Here's the list of they've got some routers here that they recommend.
And the R7000 is highly recommended for the strongest signal of almost any router at a reasonable price.
The R7000, this Netgear.
Right.
And they've got links from their website to Amazon.
It probably has twice the signal distance that the Telmex router has that I'm plugged into.
It's a $90 router, and it's not, there's only four in stock at the moment in the United States store. That's a reasonable price for a really sophisticated router. That was originally almost a $200 router.
So is that something that I could just plug in and go, or is it going to be technical?
Well, you would need to install the firmware from ExpressVPN, so you'd probably need my hand doing that. But after it's set up, you'd be able to manage it yourself, and that's what I like about the ExpressVPN firmware, is after it's set up, then you're able to go to a dashboard and see where your whole network is connected. And you can change locations very easily. So if you're trying to troubleshoot a problem, which is the standard way a VPN provider troubleshoots problems, is that they ask you, well, why don't you try and connect to Dallas, or try connecting to LA, or try connecting to Seattle? And without the ExpressVPN app in the router, then it's very cumbersome. You really have to understand how your router works. But with their software, it's more like a dashboard that you go to, and you just have these options to switch from.
Once you get it right, does that follow through on your wireless devices?
Everything that's connected to that device would be going through the VPN.
And it also gives you, since you're plugged into your normal Telmex router, you can connect either to the Mexico thing through Telmex or through your U.S. connection through the router.
So what,
you've got two different wireless signals.
What Dave's describing is a very common thing to do in this town. Maggie's done it herself, is run a VPN or a smart DNS on a router with a Wi-Fi signal and then left the infinitum Wi-Fi signal going. And then on the fly, you could move a device from one Wi-Fi to the other. So if you didn't need it on the VPN or you thought it'd be faster on the Mexican, on the Telmex, then you can swap between the two.
Well, how about the fact that if I get that router and it would support smart DNS, am I better off using the smart DNS or the Express?
That is an interesting topic. I think we all have our own opinions of that. One of the factors in there is price, what price you want to pay. I think the smart DNS is cheaper, if I remember correctly. Another issue in there is security, what kind of security you're looking for, because a VPN offers you security that smart DNS doesn't. Of course, that gets a little more nuanced because your smart DNS account can have VPN service added to it. I tend to think that if you would prefer to have a VPN for security as well as for your TV stuff, I like ExpressVPN specifically for the ability to put their software in your router and that router being very easy to configure. So I can go through with somebody like yourself and show you how to change locations, and then you don't need me to help you do that. Whereas if you're using a VPN provider such as Nord or ExpressVPN and you don't have one of these routers, then the next time you need to change something like that, you may have to call somebody like me because you're just not familiar with the router. It's not straightforward. And this ExpressVPN app, this firmware you put in the router, is very straightforward. It's very easy to intuitive is the word I'm looking for.
Another option with ExpressVPN and others and choosing whether it's a smart DNS or a VPN is what location do you want to be connected to? Because in my case, I like to use locast.org, which gives me all of my local TV channels for $5 a month, and it worked great. You know, you get CBS, NBC, ABC, plus all their extra feeds. So you have about 60 different things to watch. And I prefer watching my local hometown, and which in my case is Denver. So it's covered through the, you know,
Dave, I'm writing Locast down on applications recommendation list. I'm sorry, I think we all missed the last bit. I talked on top of you, Dave.
No, I was just saying ExpressVPN gives me my preferred location, Denver, and Locast gives me all the Denver TV channels I want, which are about 50 to 60 of them.
So I don't know if people remember, we've talked about Locast in the past. And if I remember right, this is a service to stream live local TV, but it's dependent on you being in that local area. And so what Dave's saying is that ExpressVPN that allows you to go right into your local area? That's the one you were recommending?
Right. You know, I have it, my router is configured as a Denver location under DDWRT rather than their software.
Are you able to use Locast with other locations? Could you use Locast with New York?
I don't do it because I have my router configured specifically that way rather than using their software. But you can. And, you know, one of the things is if you're a sports fan, you get all the local sports feeds, even typically when they're restricted because it's not an important enough sports event for national distribution, the local channel will cover it somehow, you know, through one of their feeds that's not broadcast universally.
I think I hear what you're saying, and that's kind of the way I remember Locast, is that really the paradigm for it is you are watching on the internet what you could be watching broadcasted locally.
Correct.
And so in your case, to take advantage of local broadcasting, you want to be in Denver. I would want to be in Anchorage, Alaska, because that's what theoretically I'd be interested in using yeah, local.
They're up to 25 locations. They have Phoenix. They don't have Tucson, for example.
Oh, that's interesting. That's a big one then. That really gives you an idea of the limit of the local broadcasts available through it. But maybe places like San Francisco, Phoenix, New York.
Yeah, L.A., San Fran, not Portland, but Seattle, mm-hmm. I know, is in there. A lot on the East Coast in Florida.
So,
and I think they're originally out of Scranton, Pennsylvania. The guy who formed it was involved as the lawyer with the, was it Alario or something like that, that got shut down because there were copyright laws? And he realized as the lawyer that the U.S. copyright law says that rebroadcasting is allowed for a nonprofit, which was designed for like PBS to have other satellites around the state.
I do remember that, signal. Yes.
And he's using that clause to do Locast as a nonprofit where you can watch it for free, but they nag you every hour to pay $5 donation a month. And if you pay, you get no nagging.
Well, Irving, I don't know if all this helps answer your question about Smart DNS versus ExpressVPN. I tend to look at them as like two different types of screwdrivers. And so you just use what's appropriate for what your needs are.
Well, it seems like I miscalculated. I'll have to get a Netgear either way. And so I've already paid for ExpressVPN. I'll just stay with it.
Well, I don't think you're making a wrong decision there. I've really enjoyed helping people with ExpressVPN and specifically with routers. I think it gives you a lot of options to just behave as though you're in the United States.
All right, thanks. I have a plan.
Have we got any other recommendations? I put Locast on my recommendations apps recommendations list for today, as well as VPN. So if you go to the blog post, you'll find links to both of those. Later this week, at the rate I'm churning this stuff out, it's taking me almost 7 days to get a blog post out with all this information. My excuse is that this time of year we do kids' birthday, and then Thanksgiving, and then kids' birthday, and then Christmas. And so I kind of feel like every week I've got all these things pulling my attention away, and the computer club stuff ends up being an unwanted stepchild sometimes. It's not true. I love it. It's a labor of love. It's my passion. It just doesn't pay the bills. So any other recommendations people would like to make? An app, a website, a TV show, a book, something that you think we all should know about? Cheryl, I see your hand.
Okay, so now that we're Amazon shoppers, 4 years ago I had my worst experience with online shopping, which was my first worst, and I swore I would never do it again, and now I'm doing it almost daily. Anyways, I don't know if you call them piggyback apps or going through other sites to get to. I don't know how you call it, but we get Air Miles. And if I go to Air Miles shops first and then link to Amazon, I'm earning Air Miles at the same time as I'm shopping.
Oh, wow.
Go ahead. And also, I know that with Amazon, I tried to do it out of our Amazon Canada and it doesn't work, but Amazon US, there's a way that you can go. I think you have to go to Castaway Kids first, and then a portion of all of your shopping goes to Castaway Kids. But it seems when I looked into it, I can only do it if I'm on my American Amazon Prime, not my Canadian, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, that does make sense. I think you sign up for a partner, and that would be region-based. And your airmilesshops.ca looks like that's region-based as well. It looks like that's a Canadian thing. So
it is. Air miles are Canadian, and you know, I have one credit card that gives me air miles for every dollar that I spend. If I shop in Safeway, Staples, those companies that are affiliated with air miles, and online, it's Amazon. So if I go to air miles shops first, then air miles, and for Black Friday, Cyber Monday, they gave me 5 times the usual amount. So we're making lots of air miles with nowhere to go.
Hey, that brings up an interesting question. So if you go to air miles shops first, and then you use your credit card that gives you air miles, and you use that to buy an Amazon thing through the Castaway Kids link, then you get double air miles and they get a promotional thing, right?
If I was on my US American for Castaways, I can't use my air miles. It's one or the other.
One or the other. Oh, wow. Oh, if you're shopping in the US, your Canadian air miles thing doesn't work. Your credit card works.
Correct.
But this, okay. Well, that's very interesting.
My credit card in the U.S. will give me air miles, but it won't give me the bonus is and things like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So on PayPal, for example, when we do donations and things on PayPal, I can use my air miles card and I will earn air miles on the donation. But yeah. There's a bunch of different ways.
I heard somebody was trying to contribute there.
About the same thing with cash.
Say that again, Dave.
Ebates, which changed their name to something starting with an R that I can't remember right off, but Rapigen or something like that. Anyway, it does the same thing, gives you a cash back in the form of a check, and your credit card can also give you cash back on the same transaction.
I think it's called Reddit, is it? Or
Something like, not Reddit, but R.
Hmm, okay.
And it pops up automatically.
I hear you being corrected in the background there, Dave. You want to bring her over to the computer and tell us how to do it?
No, she's in the other room.
Well, there are a lot of coupon add-ons you can do to your browser that will look around shopping for deals. I'm not a big proponent of that. They spend more time trying to market than they do technology, and so it worries me that you might be opening a security risk, or at the very least, you're definitely providing tracking information. Not that you're not already doing that all over the internet, but it's just one more form. It's like welcoming tracking into your lives. But at the same time, we live in a world where you can get a lot of discounts that way. So it's good to have ones that people feel comfortable with to recommend to other people.
Speaking of that, Amazon Prime at 5:15 this morning, one of us was up and it wasn't me. The telephone rang and it was Amazon Prime. I think Bill said that it was Amazon Prime telling us that our, how did it go, Bill?
Okay, it was, I just turned my mic on. It was a person saying that our Amazon Prime account had been renewed at a level of $387. Ooh. And we were supposed to immediately phone this number and talk to the agent in charge or whatever, which to me is just straight bullshit. I would say our Amazon Prime membership has been renewed, and they sure as hell don't call me and tell me to talk to an agent. And they gave a phone number. It was a phishing expedition.
Yeah, definitely. That sounded like a scam. Sounded like they were trying to talk you into giving them payment information.
Well, yeah, they were gonna ask if this wasn't correct, what was my credit card or something. You know, it was a scam.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely sounds that way.
Me being an astute internet user, I immediately assumed it was a scam and hung up.
Using all the elite skills earned from the computer club, you knew better immediately.
Exactly, exactly. And I am forever grateful for that. And that was sarcasm.
Not to Bill.
Oh, come on, some of that's true.
But you can make us tech-savvy seniors.
Well, if you guys don't have more recommendations, what about topics that we've got going on? I personally was hoping we would spend a little bit of time talking about the new Macintoshes. I've mentioned it the last 2 weeks. I don't know if anybody out there is looking at buying a replacement computer. These are some amazing computers.
Yeah, I'd like to know about them.
Jim, let me say, first off, if you're not looking, if you do not need a computer right now, then my recommendation is wait. But these are insanely fast computers, and they are meeting the expectations. They're going above and beyond the expectations of the reviewers that are using this equipment. The new Macintoshes, there are three computers that have come out. All use this new processor called an M1 chip. And this M1 chip is about to spark a revolution in computers as we know it. This is a platform change. They are migrating from an Intel-based computer framework to this M1-based computer framework. And the M1 is based on their A chip series for the iPhones and the iPad. The A's are what you call a RISC-based computing, whereas the Intel's are a CISC-based computing. And CISC stands for Complicated Instruction Set, and RISC is Reduced Instruction Set. And the idea has always been that you can do more with less, and they got adopted immediately for mobile technology back in the late 90s and early 2000s. Apple, when they went to build their iPhone, immediately recognized that they were going to need these kinds of chips and eventually bought their own fabrication system. So originally they got their chips from companies like Qualcomm. But they immediately saw the profit in them building, the profit both being literally for range of things they could do with a device if they were the ones in charge of the design of those chips. And so they've been building their own chips for the iPhone and the iPad for a long time now. And I think we're at A14, the Macintosh A series. They used their highest level chip as the architecture for a chip for their computers, and what they released, and there's some really interesting videos out there where they take an iPhone and they do the same activity like video processing, video editing on the iPhone, and then they try and do it on their Macintosh, and you watch the stutter, you watch how long it takes for that activity to come up on the computer. Whereas in the phone or in the iPad, it's right there in front of you. It's ready to go. Last year, they released an iPad Pro, that was the highest performing device that they sold. That's a tablet. It had the highest performance level out of all the devices they show, whether it's a iMac or a MacBook Pro. It was really their iPad Pro was really their highest device. Professionals jumped into it because of that, so that they could do video editing so much quicker. And think about it, these are mobile devices. These devices typically get 8 to 10 hours of battery life. So a couple weeks ago, they released their new line. It includes a Mac Mini, it includes the MacBook Air, and the MacBook Pro. They all have the same style chip, this M1 chip, which is architect based on the chips they're using for their iPads. And they claim to get twice, three times, sometimes 10 times the performance out of this M1 chip than people were seeing in regular laptops. And for the most part, they have just been blowing people away. In fact, what I'll do is I'll put a link on today's meeting that'll take you to a good YouTube video that's kind of a history of how we got to where we are now and the kind of performance gains that we've gotten from this M1 chip. These designs are allowing them to do things. They compared it to the Intel equivalent, the highest end. It just beat the Intel, hands down, just amazing performance, way high performance. The Intel needed to be plugged into a wall. It literally needed to be cranked up to over 100 watts of power. And these new M1 chips are performing at a much higher performance level, and they're operating at 10 watts of power. So these are really low power, high performance chips. that allow you to get ridiculous battery lives out of your equipment. Now, what they've done is these three lines, the MacBook Pro, the Mac Air, and the Mac Mini, are what they've approached as the low end of their product line. So I'm sure you all are familiar with how Macintosh typically has a low, middle, and high. I mean, most of the market has a low, middle, and high. So what they did is, in these categories, they replaced the low and middle class computers with these M1 chips. So you no longer get the low-end Intel-based MacBook. It doesn't exist. But the low-end M1 MacBook exists, and it just slams all over what it replaced and is performancely competitive with the high-end Intel that they're still selling. That it can easily do the same workload, and that high-end is really about having more ports and being compatible in case your professional creators who have an infrastructure in place and they can't disrupt that workflow, but they need to replace their equipment now, then they're still offering this very high-end Intel-based version of their product. They're not offering it because it's a better performer. They're offering it because it's a very specific use computer. They see that customer out there. So what you're looking at for a range of computers is a different landscape from our point of view, from a consumer's point of view, personal use computer. And let me say, if you are in the market right now for a computer, a personal use computer, you have to look at their MacBook Air. It's a dollar under $1,000. It's fanless. The reviewers are getting 4 days of battery off of it through typical use. You can put a movie on for 20 hours straight before the battery dies. These people are talking about using it for 3 days and opening it up and still finding 70% of their battery. The amount of performance they're getting out of it head to head against what they were doing is phenomenal. Their old MacBook Air running their video editing program next to their new one running the video editing program, and it's just responding like their phone. And that was the big frustration before. That was really the insulting thing. If you're in the Mac world, you had this iPhone in your hand that was able to edit videos and do special effects, render 4K, and the computer in front of them, their workhorse, wasn't able to keep up with.
Hey, Scott?
Yes, Bill?
Honest opinion. What do you think of this?
My honest opinion? I think it's amazing. I think if you are not...
No. Honestly. No.
I'm telling you. This is it. I'm blown away. I really want one so that I can play with it, because the level of performance is just off the chart. But I'm also a sensible and budgetary computer person, and there isn't a job in my life that I need a replacement for right now. There isn't anything that I'm doing that I look at and go, I need that kind of performance. Also, the majority of my life is in Windows. I would be buying into this ecosystem, and this is one of the things that is a con in this respect, is they are the most locked down computers they've ever had. They are the desktop laptop equivalents of the iPhones and the iPad. Your ability to put apps on, the kinds of apps that you can put on it, the ability to run applications is much more locked down on these new devices. So you do have two different philosophies going on here. I would argue that if it's all about your experience, if you're doing your web browsing or your video editing or your photo editing and you're doing it on Macintosh right now, these are going to blow you away. And you are not going to miss that you can't run Windows on it or switch it over to Linux. Or plug it into some obscure piece of equipment. That if your workflow is already a Macintosh workflow, that all you're going to do is gain a ridiculous amount of battery life and a whole lot more performance, the kind of performance you've seen in your iPhones and your iPads that you haven't seen on your desktop yet. If you're in the market for a computer right now, that MacBook Air is an amazing one to look at. If you're like me and you don't need a computer right now, I would wait, because this is a revolutionary change. I don't know if I've made that clear. This is a change in my Windows computer doing at most 6 hours of battery life with a 45 to 65 watt charger versus this computer that goes almost 10 times faster than that computer with 10 watt charger and a 20 hour battery. The Verge says they would have given it a 10 out of 10. It is absolutely the most exceptional computer that they've come across, with the exception of the webcam. The webcam, you'll look at these reviews, and the webcam is absolutely the same camera in these computers that it was in its predecessor. They say they made it better with software. They didn't. It's still, from what the reviewers say, it's still the crappy webcam. It's just using a lot more technology, but you can't get away from you know, crappy in. You got to work with crappy, and so it's a 720p camera that comes on the lip of these devices. Actually, these devices in themselves are only impressive because of the new chip. What they've done is they've created motherboards that fit inside the previous devices' cases. I watched them take apart a Mac Mini just recently. And the motherboard, they open up the access panel and they start going in. I'm like, oh, this is where all those strange wires are. Oh, this is where you have the stack of technology. And they open it up and it's like, there's a thing in there that's smaller than a hard drive. That's it. It's just all empty space and this little board that they made fit in the same footprint. And this is their transition. For people that need these right now, these will fit right in the same place. So you don't get a camera update. I think there was a slight speaker update, but everything was iterative except for the motherboard that was put in these devices. Again, if you're not looking for a computer, like I'm not looking for a computer, I guess the point I want to make is these are the slowest that Mac will make. It's the very first generation of these computers. And so we have nothing to gain except waiting to buy, if you're in a position to buy. But these are very reasonably priced for what they are. The Mac Mini is coming in there. Their entry price is $699. The same computer in an Intel before this was $799. The MacBook Air was $1,299, and now it's $999. The MacBook Pro was $1,599, and it's coming in at $1,299. There's a $300 difference between the MacBook Air and the MacBook Pro. That comes along with very little extra. It's got a cooling fan. That's really what you're buying. The Air has no moving parts. The Pro has a fan so that it's thermals. If you're doing something that brings that M1 up to a temperature that it needs to be cooled down and sustained at a cool level, then it's got a fan for that, and they're calling that the Pro. But it's about the only real difference. The reviewists have said they worked really hard to get the fan to kick on, and they all came back with the same thing. The Air is an incredible economical purchase. It is the Pro if you do not need to a sustained cooling. Sustained cooling might be needed if you were rendering 3D graphics, if you're rendering video, but video like 4K video, like long sections of 4K video. That's what the reviewists would throw through it to get the fan to come on. They would take like a 4K, like an hour of 4K video and edit that and then render it out. And so if you're doing an hour of rendering, then the fan would come on. But typical use, they found these CPUs to sit down around 70 degrees Celsius, which is nothing in a computer world. That, I mean, normally your CPUs are hitting almost 100 degrees, and you're using fans to cool them down so that they don't go past 100 degrees. They stay down around 95 degrees Celsius. These are staying down around 70 with heavy workloads on them. And that's why I say this is a game changer. If you're not in the market for a computer, don't even consider buying a computer now. Just wait. Wait as long as you can, because this is going to start hitting the Windows world if you're a Windows person. Intel is on a death spiral right now. They have nothing to compete with this. They have shown that the Mac equipment is able to perform better than the highest performing Intel equipment, giving equal circumstances. And so it's only special needs that will keep drawing you into Intel after this. I think that's my whole thing. I will put links to stuff if you guys are interested. I'm happy to answer any questions if you want to check and see if I have any more knowledge to give you.
Okay, Scott, to be clear, you like this thing, did you?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. I like what this is about to do to our industry.
I'm finished with my sarcastic remarks now.
Okay. Is there anybody out there that's actually in the market for a new computer right now? I don't see anybody. Jim, you're looking for a new, James, you're looking for a new computer? I think if you had to replace a computer now, say you're not getting any battery life, or it's crashing on you, or it's out of date, you got to look at that MacBook Air.
Yeah. Well, I only get about an hour's worth of battery life out of my PC. Now, you were saying you get 4 to 6 with some sort of charger, a special charger?
Well, no, what's pretty typical in an Intel world is to get somewhere between 6 to 8. And then there are some Intel-based PCs that have been crafted so that they may not be really high performers, but because of the way that they balance power management, you can get maybe 10 hours of life out of it. These new computers with these M1 chips, they're getting almost 20 hours of battery life.
I can't imagine.
Scott, do they have that in a desktop configuration?
Well, they do. That's what that Mac Mini is. And what they'll do probably in the next 4 months is they will have another announcement, and they will be announcing the M1 iMac configuration, that all-in-one with the beautiful screen. They have not released an M1 version of that yet. But the Mac Minis, I was amazed. They knocked $100 off of it. It has USB 4 on it. It does have the active cooling on the Mac Mini. So if you were doing things like video processing, you needed to do sustained video. Now, there are some exceptions in this M1, but we're really not certain yet how it's going to affect the performance. The M1 chip can address a maximum of 16 gigabytes of RAM. So a lot of PCs are running 16 gigs regular. If you go and buy a new laptop, there's a very good chance you'd be buying one with 16 gigs, and you may even be buying the ability to upgrade to 32 gigs. And if you're really going out there and shopping, you might bring home a powerhouse that could have up to 128 gigs, and we're talking about RAM. That's not storage. That's just that space that's used to keep projects open and have things move really fast. We've always associated that number with performance gain in the computer. I used to use the analogy that RAM is like your desktop space when you're sitting in your work nook. The more RAM you have is the more surface area you have, so that you can lay out projects without having to put things away. It's faster access. And so the M1 can only go up to 16 right now. But what Apple's also done is we used to have this barrier with that 16 gigs. That 16 gigs was intended for your CPU. And then you had another set of memory that was for your video memory. So when it came to encoding videos or playing video games or 3D rendering stuff, that would all happen on a GPU, and it would have its own set of memory. And what would be typical numbers there would be 1 gig, 2 gigs, 4 gigs. Or if you're a gamer, you could end up, or an architect, you could end up with 32 gigabytes of RAM that would be dedicated to your graphics card. And what this M1 chip is it's 8 CPUs and 8 GPUs built on the same piece of silicon. So you 8 GPUs, it's 16 processors in this one chip. And they've broken down that memory barrier so that the 16 gigabytes of memory can be used by either. So we're not certain yet how this is going to affect special applications. But so far, after the last couple of weeks, everyone's very happy with the kind of performance that's coming out of this. It's mind-blowing, the kind of performance that they're getting out of these. I'm sorry, James, go ahead.
Well, it's just it's not a computer that we're really looking for right now. It's maybe an iPad, because the old one's slowing down or being slowed down, something like that. So, and it's getting very full of stuff. So,
if your iPad supports the latest operating system updates, I think 13 and higher, you're able to plug in a USB storage device and use that for additional storage on your iPad.
I've only got the one place to plug into it. There's no.
You have the Lightning the Thunderbolt connector there, the Lightning connector.
Yeah.
So what they sell are USB dongles that have that connector on them.
Mm-hmm.
And they also sell adapters so that you can use traditional USB in that space. It does have to support iOS 13 or higher, though.
Yeah, mine's a 10, I think.
So you would be in the market for a new one if space is the problem.
Yeah, and unless I can upgrade this one somehow. But I don't really know how to do that, so...
Yeah, if it's 10, then if it's not offering you a new version of the operating system, then you're just stuck. There really isn't a reasonable way to try and upgrade it. It'll be a good device at 10, but if your problem is you're running out of space or you're feeling like it's slow, then the only real fix for it is to replace it.
Replace it, yeah. I think that's a bit. I mean, we bought it new and we've had it for a long time, so it's about time. Just can't carry it around. Oh, and now that I have my microphone on, 2 years ago today was when Meng Wanzhou was taken at the airport in Vancouver. So just thought I'd mention that.
What was taken? I'm sorry.
Meng Wanzhou. The Huawei executive that was taken at the Vancouver airport?
Oh, yes. The second in charge of Huawei.
Two years ago today.
Is she still under house arrest in Canada?
Yes, and she's the court case is going on. She's maybe 3 days a week in court in Vancouver now.
Wow, I'd forgotten all about that.
There you go. I just thought after 2 years in prison, or no, she's staying in her mansion in Vancouver. It's not, she wears a bracelet, and quite proudly she wears short skirts and sort of flaunts it as she goes into court.
Meanwhile, they are holding two Canadians and won't release them.
That's right.
So do you think that will change now that the political leadership in Canada or in the United States has changed?
Well, there's hope it may change now, but whether it will or not, it's hard to say. It's got to be a low priority compared to some of the other things that the new administration has to deal with, that's for sure.
Yeah, we're on the list, but we don't think we're very high.
That's right. It's like your neighbor.
Okay, Scott.
What's up, Bill? Go ahead.
Just a note that we have technology on the fly. Amazon just delivered the cable. It's this little jobby right here.
Oh, hey, that's...
And it works. It works.
Hold that back up,
Bill. It
works
just
fine.
This is
what we're talking about. That's an adapter that goes into an iPad. So that you...
No, this is an Amazon Fire.
Okay. So this is an on-the-go cable.
Yeah, on-the-go cable, yes. And I just plugged it into one of the thumb drives I had sitting around. And I, it just sits there and it says, it's ready. What do you want to look at, photos? And I just, there's my photos.
All right, because that drive could be full of movies, could be full of photos.
Anything.
You could use it for...
It says go to the libraries to view the files if you want. Let's do that.
Jeez.
It's just like another drive now.
We might have to buy one for your brother, too.
He's got an iPad.
Yeah, he's got an iPad.
Yeah, so there is one for the iPad, as long as it's not as old as James's iPad is.
Well, we don't know that. It isn't brand new, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think, if I remember right, to be able to do that on an iPad, it has to have iOS 13 or higher on it.
In fact, yeah, and back to James's, I have the same issue with my iPad. I thought it was toast because it will not update any further than what it is, and I think it's 8 or something like that. But anyways, Bill did a back to factory settings or something, and it improved it greatly. Mine was... I would type and it would sit there and think about it. And then all of a sudden it would type, it was really, really messed up. And Bill did some sort of a reset and I got it back to life again. I can't install any of the newer apps. I can't do a few things on it, but it works just fine for my little tablet.
Yeah, you could do something like stick it on a coffee table as the newspaper that you would grab. You could get a long cable for it so that it's always plugged in and charged. You could get a dock and stick it and make it a digital picture frame. Mm-hmm. I've got an old Android tablet that I use in the living room like that. It just sits on a hutch displaying pictures, and if I need a tablet for anything, I can just grab it and use it as a tablet, surf some web pages on it. It's just old and slow, but it'll still do that kind of stuff. Are you all there? Did I lose everybody? Everybody froze.
But then bigger screen than the iPhone. I use it for major. You know, it's still great for emails and everything. It's just you can't put any of the new things on it.
That's right. The model I have is actually an A1459.
A14.
I don't know what that means.
So the question is,
can I upgrade the system?
My version is 10.3.3, and the model is MD513CA. I don't know.
There is a Wikipedia page specifically for this iPad, fourth generation iPad. And yes, it looks like 10 is as high as it goes.
Mm-hmm. And then we're upgraded to that.
Yeah, 10.3.3. That's the size mine goes.
It's a paperweight.
Yeah, well, it's a newspaper. It's a digital picture frame. But it's not a computer any longer, because when you need it to do something, that's something probably it can't do any longer. Because if you need it to do it, then they're updating it and you're out of date. Because it's a need, right? If it wasn't a need, then you'd still be running the old software. But because it's a need, it's getting iterated, it's being advanced, it's getting better performance, it's getting more features, and you're not, because you're out of date.
That's right.
Well, mine had a capacity of 13 gig, and it's been full for many years. But I bought it so that I could communicate with the people by phone. And we didn't. So it was our only
Mine works really well to read the New York Times every day.
Yeah. There you go. That's probably a good example of a single purpose or a couple of purposes that it still has that it would be useful to continue to use for. It'd probably also be good for a grandkid. Like if you got somebody, you got somebody young enough, you wouldn't want to hand them a brand new piece of equipment, but you still want to keep them entertained. That might be a good way to do it.
Well, our youngest is six, and he has a better one than this.
The grandchildren have way more deluxe stuff than us. They always go, "Oh, Grandma," about my flip phones, my old antique things. They passed us in technology when they were six.
Well, being a parent, there are times your kid gets sent to Grandma's house without any technology.
As a punishment.
That's right. It's like, no, you're supposed to go talk to her. You're supposed to go spend time with her, not on your phone.
Well, today is December 1st, and our two teenage grandsons are home alone doing homeschooling. Well, mom is at school with the daughter because she's under grade 7. She's grade 5, and Alberta has done anybody grade 7 and up has gone to online schooling now, started yesterday, because we are the hotspot for COVID in the country.
Oh. Yeah.
Our mini Trump, premier is...
denying.
No, economy is so much more important than lives.
Yeah. Boy, here doesn't feel like anything's really changed. I feel like we've got low numbers here in Guaymas, but Hermosillo, last I checked, it was the fourth most infected city in the country. So I just find it amazing that we've got such low numbers in Guaymas and such high numbers just an hour's drive away.
Well, and it's the activities of the people.
Yeah, and we are a vacation town and people are vacationing. People are coming to the beaches. People are like more than you would expect given the circumstances. Hey, I'm sorry, go ahead.
How is it in San Carlos? Is there lots of infection? Like, we're getting it now on the island, too. There's three or four cases here, even in Qualicum Beach, our little town, 10,000 people.
There really isn't. You don't hear about a lot of infections here in San Carlos. I mean, I group San Carlos, Guaymas, and Empalme together. Empalme does have its own numbers, but San Carlos doesn't. It's San Carlos and Guaymas. But locally, we just have not had a lot of infections. And it's funny when you talk to the locals, I mean, not the gringos, but the Mexicans, because I've been hearing the opposite of the United States conspiracy theory that the people that are getting sick and dying are being written down for completely different things, that they are. Jim, is it you that I keep hearing? I'm going to mute you because I think your speakers are broadcasting across. Yeah, because I'm listening to myself come back to me. No, not you, James. You're good.
Jim's got a good speaker.
He does. It's really, it's robust. and I lie. It's not
my,
you. It's not you.
Mine's been off.
Yeah, I was going to say. It's not you. It's somebody else's sound that's coming through. Maybe it's Cheryl's. Maybe it's you.
Maybe it's me.
Do I have everybody on screen? 2, 4, 6. Yeah, I think I do. So the in here locally, they think that the people that are dying are being written down as pneumonia, heart disease, diabetes. In fact, we have one experience in the family where he died of diabetes, when he wouldn't be dead if he hadn't had COVID. And that's what's happened. And you know, that's kind of the reverse of what they claim is going on in the United States. They're claiming everything's being written down as COVID. And so, no, he died of diabetes when really the doctor wrote it down as COVID. And in the States, it seems like we've had plenty of debunkers of that kind of thinking. Scientists that have come out and said, no, these people shouldn't be dead if they hadn't gotten sick with this virus. Cheryl, you look ready to say something.
Yeah, there's the thing about the number of deaths, and I think the most disappointing thing for me, anyways, is our province, they say, you know, stay at home. They say different things, and they're all recommendations. And finally, when we have massive outbreaks, especially in our senior homes, they shut things down. And then people are objecting to that. We had huge rallies in the city of Calgary about the restrictions they put on, while the rest of us in the province are saying, you didn't go far enough. You know, so it's just so conflicting. You know, you just think, and you do your part, you stay away and everything. And these other ones, they believe that it's their rights. And when our premier put the restrictions on, he spoke about not wanting to intrude on the rights of people. He just got them, you know, he just spoke right to them and got them all riled up. And they have these huge rallies and protests, and it's just, yeah.
You know, it's crazy. I heard a health expert say something like a federated democracy is not ideal for a health issue, for a national health issue, that other places like China are able to deal with this easier because they don't rely on this kind of governing. This is one of those times when the federal government needs to be able to seize control of all the states and lay down. I'm sorry, that's very insightful language. I shouldn't say it like that. But it should be trickling down from the top. We should all be following the same message. It's the only way to have gotten it under control. And now the United States from the outside appears to be this festering cesspool of diseased people that are not going to be allowed in any other country until vaccinations are showing up. And they're literally talking about vaccination passports and vaccination certificates that will, you know, allow you to go out to dinner, allow you to go to the movie theater. It's just like the complete opposite of what you would expect from the American culture, which would be freedom. I can do whatever I want unless you tell me I can't. It seems, yeah, we're in a strange place right now. The very thing that they're using to rally against will end up being putting them into a position where we're going to have bracelets wherever we go.
Sheesh.
If only we had listened sooner and got it under control sooner, then we could live in our democracy. But now we've got people that would fight for freedom, fighting for the idea of we can open the movie theaters if we use vaccination certificates. Right? And the movie theaters are asking. They're saying, hey, we want to be able to do this business, so we're going to start asking people to certify that they've been vaccinated before we'll allow them to buy a ticket.
Well, I hope to, there's something, something's got to be figured out, you know, because it's the people who believe in right to life. They also seem to be in right to die. So I'm not sure what that's about.
Yeah. It's a bit of a hypocrisy, isn't it? I felt that way long before we had COVID. Right to life means just the birth. We're not going to educate them. We're not going to feed them. You're not going to take care of them. We're going to throw you in jail if any of that doesn't happen. But you definitely can't choose not to have them.
Well, kind of to bore you with this story, we were sort of got in this place and realized that we were with these born-again people who were really espousing their views against abortion and right to life and so on. And so I was just quiet and just left it go. And then the conversation went down and people were poking me to try and get some. And I said, oh, I'm a right to lifer too. And then they all smiled and nodded like this just knowingly. And I said, I don't believe in capital punishment. And oh, the room just erupted. It was...
That's awesome.
So,
Mom.
It is.
Yes, I'm on.
Okay, I saw your mic come open. I figured you'd had something you wanted to say.
Well, we maybe passed the subject a little bit now, but it does have to do with life. In Canada, do you have to pay for your testing for COVID?
Actually, right now it depends. If I am asymptomatic, I don't have any symptoms, and I just request a test, I'm not going to get one. Right now, we are only testing those people that have been exposed. Each province is a little bit different. But the bottom line is probably no, I do not have to pay. If I wanted to buy a test and do it, it's available to me. But I don't have to pay for it myself.
Okay. The reason I ask is I just heard from a friend of mine in Oregon. Her son wasn't feeling well, so they decided he needed to go get a test. 6 hours he waited in line to get his test, and it cost him $175 for the test because his insurance didn't cover it.
Hey.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah,
well,
I know.
But you don't have to pay.
Well, that's just outrageous.
Yeah. Even the 6 hours is outrageous, but
the whole thing, whole system.
That was to take the test. When was his, when did he get his results?
Well, he hasn't yet.
Yeah.
It just happened yesterday. And he said 3 to 4 days, I guess, something like that.
Our public health people are saying that if for contact tracing and so on and for getting a handle on it, over 2 days, and it's useless to wait.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to share that with you because I thought that was so outrageous.
Yeah,
the other thing with testing is why are you testing? Our brother-in-law is in, my brother-in-law, Bill's brother, is in a home, and he had contact with somebody that was tested positive. So they tested him and locked him in his room, basically. So he's locked in his room. The second day of his lock-in, they did the swab, throat swab, came back the test result on day 4, but he is locked up for 14 days because he had contact. And what they're saying is, yes, he tested negative on day 2, but you never know what day you're going to test negative or positive, and so they don't rely on it. What they've discovered is that they will test you, but they will not make a decision on whether or not you should isolate based on the test. So I guess they're testing to see how many people that had this much contact at this time, whether or not they're positive or negative, but they're not really using the testing to decide freedom or treatment or whatever.
Well, it sure lets you know why a lot of poor people are going to continue to suffer the COVID.
Hey, speaking of poor people, I'll tell you our experience. You know, Yuya was recently exposed to COVID worker that was infected. They were working close together. I think I might have mentioned it in previous meeting. And so she immediately, as soon as she could, got a COVID test. She's asymptomatic. I mean, it has no reason to think she's sick except that she's been working alongside this other coworker. And it took 3 days, and they had to buy it outright because here, at least here in Sonora, if you don't show symptoms, the government won't test you for free. Now, if she had been dying, they would have come and tested her, and if she tested positive, they would have tested our whole family, which you hear stories of that happening. But just because she was exposed, they would not test her, and so her work had to pay for that test. And it came back negative, But we had to quarantine for the 4 days that it took to get those results back. And we figured, oh, this actually, I'll run this into another COVID story. And then we got to start wrapping this up because we've been on this channel forever. But we figured that if she tested negative, there was no reason to be concerned for the rest of my family, that my kids are probably negative, that I'm probably negative. We're just too close to, if she's sick, we're sick. And so if she had come back positive, then we would have gone through the motions of getting ourselves tested as well. Well, later on, we're talking with, I mean, after all of this has happened, right around the quinceanera time, we're talking to good friends of ours, and this family, her work was having her work at home, and so she was 24/7 at home with the kids at school, at home. I mean, when I say at school these days, if you don't catch it, they're at the kitchen table. I mean, when kids are at school now, they're at the kitchen table online. And so the kids haven't gone anywhere. She hasn't gone anywhere, but he is a tech like me, but he works for one company that sends him around Mexico at their different facilities. She gets ridiculously sick, just scary sick, and her company pays for the test so she can get the results immediately, finds out that she's positive for COVID. They inform the government. The government comes and tests the whole family. He's positive for having had COVID. Kids are negative. Three kids, no COVID. He's the one that's brought it home. He thought he had allergies. She's like dying from this stuff. I mean, just like the worst 2 weeks of her life. He has no symptoms at all. She's never left the house. She picked it up from him somehow. It was in his hair, or it was in his clothing or something. Or he just passed it being asymptomatic. I'm sorry.
Our friend in London tested just out of curiosity, and she turned out to have had it, but she can only think back to maybe sometime in the spring when she had a few sort of odd symptoms, but nothing that was just debilitating or anything. And she just has been self-isolating in London. You know, how can you do that? But as best she can, but... she seems to have had it, which is, I guess, a bit of a relief.
I guess. I mean, it's at this point in the United States, I think it would be a relief at this point. At least you've been through it. You've had it. Maybe you feel more comfortable now. You drop your guard a little bit.
It seems like a long time. There's some suspicion that it comes back for some people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And some people, it doesn't necessarily come back, but a long time after, well, 6 months, 8 months is what we're looking at now, they are feeling these different effects. And it could be vision, it could be muscle aches, it could be fatigue, just a whole...
normal day for me. I said a normal day for me.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. And so your friends, Scott... he thinks, geez, I've got a mild case of allergies or something, and in that, but it affects her so differently. Yeah. You know, so it's very specific to different people and different makeup, and it's not necessarily pre-existing.
It is a virus, and it's a new virus, and that's the reason we can sit around for hours speculating on this stuff, is because we don't have information to fill those holes. The flu, we know. The flu's been around forever. Everybody knows what to expect from the flu. We know how many people are going to die from it. We know how to take care of ourselves. We know about our immune systems. We know the vaccinations each year. We've got vaccinations made up against it. And this is just too new. And so it leaves us with all these open holes with no information that we're learning. I find it fascinating because we're always learning something new about it now.
Yeah. It's going to take a while. It's going to take years to know exactly how it affects different people at different stages. And yeah.
Well, and who knows, just like with a virus, you think about things like cold sores and shingles, and who knows, you could be suffering from something years from now. You might have an outbreak of something that's related to having had this before. We've got to come to an end with this meeting. We've been here for a long time. This is a lot of audio for me to edit, and it may not get done this week.
Goodbye, everyone.
Yeah. See you, Irving.
Nice to see you.
So
Jimmy, nice to see you.
It's always good to see you guys. I will continue to do this as long as you guys continue to have an interest in meeting like this. If you have any issues with the meeting, be them personal or schedule or technology, please get a hold of me. I'd like to sort them out with you because I'd like to keep us doing these meetings. And remember, if you got technical problems, I'm available for remote help. You can get a hold of me, remote@internationalcs.net. You can also contact me personally if you'd like, scott@internationalcs.net. I'm available on either of those email addresses. Or a lot of you have my phone. You're welcome to call me. But until next week, this has been the San Carlos Computer Club. And look for a blog post later this week that will have the audio from this meeting as well as links to things we've talked about together, hopefully with more information. And I still have topics for next week we never got to. So I've got stuff that we will talk about next week. And check out those new Macintoshes because I kind of like them, as Bill would say.
Yeah.
Thanks. Okay, until next week, you guys tech on.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Nice to see you guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Scott.
Bye, guys.
Bye.